The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
We now return to The Collector and the Dealer, Season 3, Episode 2, recorded at an earlier date.
So you're here because you want to know modern, vintage, everything in the world of card collecting today. Chuck,
he's the collector,
and Joe,
he's the dealer,
welcome you to the best card talk that covers it all, from the hottest new cases to 67 high numbers, all brought to you by Sports Card Investor, the leading source for videos, podcasts, and articles about investing in sports cards. Profit from the hobby you love by visiting sportscardinvestor.com. Collector, dealer, take it away.
Season 3, Episode 2 of The Collector and the Dealer. Joe buys a stack. It is Chuck Oliver. I am the collector. He is the dealer. That's Joe Davis. And Joe, welcome back to the show, man. How you doing today?
Doing great. We had a busy week, and we've got plenty to share with our listeners today.
All right, I'm going to say something impossible. Yeah, quickly cover the card submission landscape right now, because multiple times, and like, I got status, I got priority, and you're like, yeah, can you come another day? I got 1,000 cards that just got dropped off. People are just in troves now that a lot of the service levels have opened up and become cheaper.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it used to be, I would say to my guys, like, you know, how many shipments did we get today? And now it's how many tubs full of shipments did we get? Because it's insane. Every day the mail backs up and there are just piles of submissions coming in the door. And it's great. We love serving the customers and helping them out with their submissions. But yeah, the volume has definitely increased dramatically in the last few months.
I was up there at your storefront two Saturdays back and dropped off myself some 2021 autos from Gypsy Queen, the inserts there, and then also a couple of the Clearly Authentic from 1998 Donruss, which I've actually fallen in love with the significant signatures there. I have two Koufax that I'm going to drop off. You already got the Ryan from me. But I say I was at your store. As I said, Joe Davis, he's the dealer. Well, how can people get in touch with you and give them a quick bird's eye of your history as a dealer?
Yeah, I've been Atlanta area dealer full time since 1991. Our store is now located out in Loganville, Georgia. And we are available online at gotbaseballcards.com. That's GOTBaseballCards.com. We have the largest selection, I believe, in the Southeast, over 10 million cards in stock. Thousands of graded cards, and we not only sell cards, again, we serve customers, help them with their own submissions, help them with consignments and whatever they need.
Yeah, and as far as being a storefront and people giving the address in the current landscape, we talked about this last episode, you have very little concern about that relative to other dealers, because the area you're in, the foot traffic, the specific safety precautions, so you feel pretty squared away in that location, and come one, come all during open hours, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Open 6 days a week to the public.
All right. So we said episode 2 of season 3. We end every show with Joe buys a box and he takes something off his own shelf, rips it, just a preview of a new product that has come in. Well, this time, Joe, it's Joe buys a stack. At one time, you told us about walk-ins. Hey, are you buying? And you're like, yep, I'm buying if you have old cards from the 50s and 60s. Now, way different. Describe two things here. What realistically can walk through your door each day looking to sell that you would actually purchase? And tell us what actually does come through with offers to buy, because sometimes what you would really want to purchase is different than what you get offered on a daily basis. But what is it basically, a typical day with you?
Yeah, I mean, on a typical day, it'll be, you know, we'll probably see some 80s and 90s, you know, which is what we have plenty of. But I have to say, we've had some great walk-ins over the last year. I had one stretch last year where over about a three-month period, I bought 351 Bowman Mantles, and two of them were part of complete sets. So we have seen some great stuff come in the door. You know, we don't see is really high-end modern collections, because those who have bought the stuff recently are still pretty attached to it.
Patrick Mahomes' national treasures are...
Yeah, Josh Allen, it doesn't happen. It's, you know, what people will bring in, hey, I ripped a case of Prism. Do you want to buy the Commons? You know, we have that come in. But the high-end modern, because those who've opened it or bought it, they're still attached to it.
So Joe Burrow, rookie patch auto, not yet.
No, I'm afraid not. But we do have... Hey, this was my grandfather's collection. This was my parents' collection, et cetera. So we do have some of that come in, not nearly as much as we'd like. We end every day with more cash in hand than we wish we had, because I wish some great collections would come in the door. But there's always tomorrow for the next one.
Collecting the Dealer, Season 3, Episode 2, Joe Buys a Stack. Well, let's talk about what I've been buying, because my story, I've told it, as a second grader, 1976, 75, I jump into the hobby just buying cards at the local Magic Market. I re-entered the hobby in 2013 when I found just a packing box with a bunch of my stuff in there. And I looked at it, I was like, oh, 65 Steve Carlton. If I could go back to 2013 when I re-entered the hobby, Joe, I would, okay? And I have a theory about this and a question. I would, if I could go back, buy PSA 8, 8.5, 9s, and 10s of iconic Hall of Fame players. And apologies, I'm not talking about Gator Perry except for, you know, the 66. That's just not what – even Juan Marichal, it's not what moves. I'm talking Mantle, Clemente, Aaron, all of them. You know them. And then selected others, and that's Maris, Kurt Flood, some of the others, okay? As well as high-end current sealed boxes and cases, put them in the closet. Any current card purchases of mine would be Bowman Draft, Chrome Autos, or their equivalent in the other sports. So that's what I would do, because I know over the past decade, this is what the turnaround has been, the flip. This is what the increase, and this is what the hot cards that seemingly everybody is after. What do you think about that strategy today? Now, I might have a great stack of Ohtani autos and parallels. Also might have like 25 really expensive Chris Bryant cards, who has won an MVP and played for the Cubs, and his cards are nuclear winner. So yeah. I'm not saying I would cherry pick and it would be perfect. I'm saying as a general strategy, what about just start doing that now?
Yeah, you've got to compare the different landscape between now and 2013. In 2013, there wasn't so much baked in growth of, you know, the prices of products. You know, nowadays, you know, a Bowman Chrome product will come out and on release date, it'll be selling for 3x direct cost. That wasn't the case in 2013. You know, so there's, because of the growth of the industry, and there's still so much limited supply relative to the incredible demand, so many products have baked in price growth before they ever come out. I mean, I had someone coming in yesterday, and he's like, hey, I want to pre-order some Topps Chrome Baseball. And I was like, well, let me check market. And market's like $400 a hobby box. You know, in 2013, that was a $75 box on release date. And it hasn't come out yet. Diamond Icons just came out from Topps, one of their really high-end
products. I saw that. Is it like a $2,900 a box or something?
Buys are actually higher than that already. When last year's product...
Looked at suggested retail. I apologize.
Oh, yeah. Buys. I was like, yeah, that you need to snag those if you see them at that. So last year, direct cost on that was around 13 and a quarter. This year, direct cost was $2,500. And by the time it came out, market was already over 3,000. And so I was emailing my rep at Topps, and I was like, is this seriously the same product? And they're like, yep, but it's loaded from what I'm hearing. So I underestimated the market again, because it's selling for well over direct cost. And so, but that's even in 1 year. But the bottom line is, back to your original question. So there's a challenge with the unopened boxes to do that, because you just don't buy stuff on release date nearly as affordably as you could in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
As far as buying up the Hall of Famers, the iconic guys, that strategy is still safer. What is not as safe is the rookies and prospects. There is so much hype now, you know, guys in A-ball and his rookies are, I mean, you know, they'll say, oh, his autographed rookies are $2,000. I'm like, wait a minute, he's in A-ball.
Yeah.
So there's so much hype, and not all those guys are going to pan out. So,
no, there's Michael Harris. There's also Drew Waters.
Yes. So you got to be very careful when you're buying, when you're overpaying for unproven talent. I mean, that's always been the case, but now you're paying exponentially more for that unproven talent than you did, you know, 9 years ago.
As far as the iconic Hall of Famers, again, we should all, Koufax, man, you know, whoever, we know the names. Satchel Paige, by the way, and I will say this, and this is a direct result because of society, I believe. Brother, you look at Satchel Paige, Jackie, Curt Flood, I think iconic black players on original issue, not like a Josh Gibson, you know, reissue by Fleer and, you know, whatever year. I think specifically there is a lot of blue sky there. And it's already happened with Clemente, and that happened many years ago. But I think that there is a particular segment of the hobby and some cards that is about to explode. Any comment about that?
I totally agree. I mean, the Jackie Robinson movie that came out a few years ago, which I loved, I think brought a lot of people who may not have been as familiar with Jackie's story and got to see a nice depiction of his character as a man, as well as his ability as an athlete. After that movie, I had a lot of people like, hey, I want to put some Jackie Robinson cards in my collection. And that's...
yeah, there's like four of them.
Yeah, exactly. There's not many, but that is spilled over. I mean, I've always said, you know, Aaron, of course, is way too cheap. We'll touch on him later. But you know, by comparison to Mantle, you compare their stats. Obviously, the rings aren't the same, but a lot of the early 50s, early 60s cards of those iconic African-American ball players, I still believe have plenty of room for growth.
And Curt Flood, I'm going to bet you a dollar to a donut he's getting in the Hall of Fame. And his 58 tops is his rookie?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm telling you, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. That's Marvin Miller got in. Can you remember what anybody, a baseball writer, thought of Marvin Miller in like the 1981 strike, for instance? And then they voted him in. Veterans put him in. There were players running from Marvin Miller when he first showed up. Curt Flood's getting in.
Thank you for that investment tip. I may need to buy some up.
There you go. Now, speaking of, you bring up a good point there about the Jackie movie, because as The Last Dance was airing, same thing what you just said about Jackie, prices of MJ cards increased by multiples. They seen the PSA 10, and there are different 10s. I mean, you can look, and there's a slightly better 10 versus another, but I don't want to say they've leveled out, but right now they seem like in the 250 range. That seems reasonable. As The Last Dance was airing, though, that's when the price increase jumped. There have since been multi-episode docs of other icons with more planned. Have any other docs spurred that reaction? What's the potential for it to happen with any players in future docs?
Well, it's funny you say that. Just yesterday I saw that LeBron and Wade are going to be releasing a Redeem Team documentary on the 2008 USA basketball team, of course, which won the gold after they had lost in 2004. And Kobe was the captain of that team. And I think Krzyzewski was the coach. So that one I'm sure will be exciting. I think they're doing that through Netflix. And of course, the Lakers have the Buss family actually has a multi-part documentary airing on Hulu right now called Legacy, which looks at the Lakers dynasty, you know, the history, starting with the Magic era through Kobe, through LeBron. So all of those names, you know, their cards may get some love because of the attention that series will bring. So, of course, you know, everyone expects a full-fledged Kobe documentary at some point. Don't know, you know, when. Magic has had another documentary out recently. So a lot of Lakers are getting some airtime. So time will tell. I mean, I watch all those because I love Lakers are my favorite NBA team. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of movement. Kobe's already one of the best sellers. Magic's a good seller. Kobe's an outstanding seller. So may see a little more movement on their cards.
Joe, before we move on quickly, I want to ask you about my strategy. I said I would go online and I'm buying PSA 8, 8.5, 9s, and 10s if I can get them. Of iconic Hall of Famers, Nolan Ryan, Willie Mays, etc. Here is my strategy for bidding. I will go look at cards that are posted by reputable eBay merchants so that, you know, at least, you know, the likelihood of shill bidding is lessened, I guess I'll say it that way. Right. But I will go on eBay and find reputable sellers. I will look at auctions only. And for Iconic Hall of Famers in that grade, I'll look for a card that may have already 24, 25 bids, and I'll trust that the market has said that that's a pretty decent price, and then I'll start jumping in the last day or two. I'm not going to get all of those cards or most of those cards. I might get some of them, but I'm not trying to be aggressive and build a collection with speed. I'm trying to make sure that, all right, I jump in at a decent price, and that seems to me a way to let, like, I'm participating in real time in the market setting the price without overbidding and really, you know, wrecking the financial part of it. What do you think about that as a flyover?
Yeah, I think, yeah, you always recommend to bidders, know what you want to pay. You can often use a snipe program and put in your max. If it goes over, then don't feel bad. You said, you know, this is the most I wanted to pay. I didn't get it for that, so I'm going to stop. But as far as just the investment side, the wisdom of buying Iconic Hall of Famers in high grade, I think you'll continue to see steady growth over the next few years.
Joe telling you what could be ahead on the investment front, hoops-wise. We're going to take a quick break, come back with part two of The Collector and the Dealer, Season 3, Episode 2.
A popular thought in the sports card world is that there's two camps, those that love the hobby and those that profit from the industry. Thanks to Sports Card Investor, you can do both. Jeff Wilson has built his Sports Card Investor YouTube channel and his personal website, sportscardinvestor.com, so that if you're a beginner looking to flip cards for cash or a returning veteran to the hobby wanting to make sure you get the best deals ahead of any emerging price trends, Sports Card Investor is for you. Sports Card Investor, the leading source for videos, podcasts, and articles about investing in sports cards. Profit from the hobby you love by visiting sportscardinvestor.com.
Collector and the Dealer, Season 3, Episode 2. We move on to the vintage part of the program. Chuck Oliver, I'm the collector. Joe Davis, he am the dealer. So I'm a peruser of old hobby publications of all types, and I was reading something, Joe, and you'll remember this, I guess, cause we're the same age. I guess it was summer, maybe after my ninth grade year, and I'm reading a baseball card news, if you remember that. And it was a newsprint sort of issue, came out monthly or maybe every 2 weeks for a while. And I got reminded recently of the uproar in 1983. You would have thought Topps suggested closing the Vatican. A quote official, like from Topps, 1952 Topps reprint set. Biggest complaint was it's negatively going to affect prices of the original cards in the actual set. Well, okay, that didn't happen. What place in the hobby today do those sets have? They were issued in sealed boxes from Topps, and they sell eBay, depending on the overall condition of the box and everything, sealed 100 to 150. What is your remembrance of when that fit? Because that was a big deal back in 83. There were editorials written about it.
Yeah, I think people got a little carried away. What they should have realized is it's a different cardstock on the back. It's a different size. I mean, they're standard size instead of over. So it's like, don't get so...
Yeah, it looks wrong. It just looks... Yeah. It doesn't look right.
Yeah. People got out of kilter. And the Topps was trying to... I mean, besides making a product that would be profitable, it was giving people a taste of something that they couldn't afford otherwise. So Topps went on and did the, I think that was released in 83, if I remember correctly. And then in 1991,
yeah,
I believe they did the 1953 archive set, which actually came in packs, and which they did the cards that never were, because I remember that set had a 53 Aaron card, and then the next year they did the 1954 archives that were released. And those two were packed. So nowadays Topps will reprint. Like if I can't tell you how many times they've reprinted Mantle cards in different sets. You know, in 1996 they did.
Oh gosh, entire, yeah.
Yeah, they did chrome version. They did refractor versions. They did paper versions.
He was in last year's. I'm sorry, last year's archives for the 70th, wasn't it? They did five different years, and he was on like a 2002 card.
Yeah, the archives is where they really go long on the reprinted cards, and we get some of those submitted sometimes for grading, and we're like, you know, this is the reprint, right?
All right, a good friend of mine was a quality source for vintage cards. Ray Olson, he's a guy from Philadelphia that had moved to Augusta, Georgia, and he would just travel the circuit. I mean, I'm saying, oh, gosh, he would go – he was a go-around, set up at shows. You know, if he could find a good three-day show, he would do that. One-day shows, whatever. You know what it is. He's on the tour. About 2 years ago, sold all his vintage, has gone exclusively unopened, new product, and then graded, you know, numbered singles. Talk about the market for vintage overall. And I'm saying, I understand what that is, Joe Jackson Cracker Jack, or like a 53 Satchel Paige. I'm saying if you do a show almost every weekend, you're that level of dealer. What is the environment right now? Groups of, say, for every 100 customers, Joe, who walk through the door, how many are going to have a checklist for either 54 Bowman, 71 Topps Baseball, whatever, looking for a table full of trays of vintage in order by year? What is that?
Yeah, percentage-wise, it's few and far between. But I will tell you, for instance, at the National this year, we had several tables full of vintage singles. And those who found us loved us for having them and having them in order. And they didn't balk at the pricing much. It was like, hey, here's $200 less. Will you go $175, $180, whatever? So it's always fun because those guys, they need them for their collection. They're passionate about it. They're thankful we have it. So we do well with them. But yeah, percentage wise, I'm not arguing his change of strategy because, you know, 9 out of 10 that come in the door want to see the new stuff because the youth that are coming into the hobby and the younger collectors, they're chasing the guys they know, the guys they've watched and that they grew up with. Whereas they don't know the guys from the 50s and 60s necessarily. So, you know, we try to provide both. You know, we try to provide the newest, hottest rookies of Herbert and Burrow and Trey Young and Luca. And then we also have, you know, boxes of 48 Bowman singles for customers to go through. Same thing here at our store. We do both.
All right. Well, I still love me some, not only vintage, but I love me some pre-war, I believe. Advice for purchasing raw cards. From 2013, about 2 years ago, I always trusted my eyes and other tools, you know, magnifying glass, loop, you know, LED loop. Man, what a purchase. For buying raw cards that I could get for about half or maybe two-thirds of the same card in a slab. Joe, I am very loath to buy raw cards now, except for, I mean, a very few sources. And that's not even a guarantee at all. I just saw, did you see the Brady card that got a 6 from PSA?
Yeah.
And the same card got submitted, and it's an 8. But anyway, so that's not even a guarantee. I'm certain it's way different based on vintage, pre-war, et cetera, versus ultra-modern. I say it's kind of hard to trim a 2019 Topps Chrome card, but I just saw what happened with a Brady, and that's a modern card. So tell me, just speak to me and everybody listening about, I still want to buy raw cards, but I'm scared money right now.
Yeah, I mean, it boils down to price point. Like, I wouldn't advise anyone to buy a raw Jordan rookie for anything. I had two in one day come in last week that they had paid thousands for, and they were both counterfeit. I mean, they both came in to grade them like, these are both counterfeit. Guy's like, well, I just paid $3,000 for it. And I'm like, that was a mistake. You know, I hope you can get your money back.
My goodness.
So I would say limit your downside when you're buying raw, like $100, you know, whatever. If you're going to buy a $1,000 card, if you're going to buy a $500 card, I would highly recommend it being graded by one of the leading grading companies. Even if you crack it out and say, I'm going to stick it in my notebook, as I know you did back in the day. But,
yeah.
You know, it's so risky.
Why did I do that? You told me, I showed you, you know, which one it is too. It was a 67 Mantle. And I showed you, and well, I asked you about it, and you're like, Chuck, that's a good price. But he says, but I know what you're going to do. You're going to crack it out and put it in your sleeve. You're going to take away a lot of the value, at least a third of the value, if not more. Well, I cracked it out, had to resubmit it. Joe, it came back an 8 again. If it would have come back a 7.5 or a 7, I literally could have cost myself $2,000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we've seen that happen. I had a customer buy a Dr. J rookie from me at the National so he could get it signed. He cracked it out.
Oh, Lord.
Got it signed. I don't know how much it went down, and I don't know what the grade dropped to, but I'm like, well, Dr. J's got really big hands. He's going to be handling that card and signing it, so you never know what it's going to come back as. So,
heavens. All right. That wraps up the episode.
Joe buys a box.
Oh, it doesn't. All right, Joe buys a box, and Joe, you got a store full of inventory, and you can turn around and get anything you want from Top Series 2 blasters to something a little more distinctive. What are you doing this weekend?
I'm going with a brand new Topps Clearly Authentic Baseball. It's a one-pack box. It goes really quickly, but I just love the design on those. They're, if you've never seen them, they're acetate cards, autograph cards. They have all kind of parallels. From, you know, greens number to 99, they got gold one of ones. They've got both modern and retired stars. They've got this year's series has Clearly Authentic 1955 reimagining autographs, which showcases retired legends in the 55 Topps design, which is one of my favorite years. Those are numbered to 199 or less. So it's just a beautiful product for like $85, and we always so usually that lasts about a week. We got in four cases yesterday. We've already shipped out. We'd already pre-sold one of them. And expect to sell out of that product quickly.
You said 85. That's one pack in the box. Is it one card in the pack?
One card.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And so it's an encased card, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because I bought some of those. In fact, it's kind of cool. The one I got, and I'm going to say this, I'm not going to downgrade anything because it's personal taste. I bought a Dennis Eckersley card from just a few years ago, obviously not from his career when he was playing, but it was on the clear plastic, the adhesive, strip that they could then affix to the card. And I so, like everybody else, prefer on card, but also got Dennis Eckersley, a Hall of Famer, on a really cool looking card for like $22. So, who's going to complain about that? So Topps Clearly Authentic Baseball, my vintage set of the week. All right. Out of nowhere, I'm about to purchase my first ever T206 Wide Open Horizon, Joe. It's called the Monster. It's 524. That's not realistic. It's actually 520 cards. That's not realistic. I think what I'm going to do is just kind of buy some nice cards that I like and try to build a cool collection and maybe some of the cool rare backs, American Beauty, the Carolina Brights, whatever. And that you can't go wrong if you go about it and get at a decent enough price. But if you collect what you like, you'll never go wrong. That is the saying, and I found that to be true. Do you have much experience with T206?
I do. I had a customer years ago, very memorable collection. He came in with a literal shoebox with over 200 of them. And he just said, yeah, I just needed to find out if these were real or not. And I start flipping through. There's Mathewson, there's Cobb, there's Walter Johnson, and multiples of a lot of them. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're real, all right. And so I finally convinced him, this is before grading was as well known and as prevalent. So I finally convinced him to get some of them graded. And then I sold a few and he was shocked at the prices I got for them. And so he was like, I'm going to bring you, he just left a few with me. Then he brought me everything. And so we ended up consigning a number of them and then buying the rest of them. And that doesn't happen enough, but I've handled several hundred of them over the years.
You and I, we've talked with Anson Whaley from by the way, folks, look up Anson Whaley, prewarcards.com. We've had him on before and we have talked about the rarity of some of the backs and how that affects prices now. I've actually texted with him a little bit. I have a site, I've talked about going back and reading old publications. I have been trying to, he and I have talked about it. He says, well, let me know what you find because he's occasionally looking for the same thing. How far back can I find something documented in, a weekly or a monthly magazine where it's the first reference to the back of a card? And it could be so-and-so from the Southern League, Piedmont or Tolstoy or Hindu. And I've gone back as far as like 1976 and I have found a mention of a back, as far as rarity increasing, you know, the value of it. And so it's a really interesting pursuit when those backs really started to change the value of the cards. Do you recall, did you have a Cobb Green portrait? Because I would say outside of the rare cards, pre-war cards, the real rare ones, the expensive ones everybody knows, I'm telling you, that Cobb Green portrait is the most desired pre-war tobacco card that exists.
I don't believe I ever had a green. I've had multiple of the reds, but don't believe I ever had one of the green ones. But, yeah, classic card. I had a couple of I don't even remember which one that wasn't, you know, Plank or Wagner or anything. But I had a couple of the other rare variant, which, you know, I sold in the five-figure category. But would love to have some of those back just for my collection.
You know what? Maybe you will this week. Who knows what walks in. All right, that wraps up this episode of The Collector and the Dealer.
The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
Camp Margaritaville RV Resort, where you can just breathe in and breathe out. Or move. There's biking, boating, arcade games, hiking, nearby golfing. Or fly through the new Fins Up Water Park. Thrills, chills, twists, and turns. This could be you. Camp Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy 1 hour drive from Atlanta. Book your stay today at CampMargaritavilleLanierIslands.com.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.